Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, there was a lot of volatility in markets again today, both locally and globally. The Chinese dragon breathing fire again following that GDP print, beating expectations. EOH, Mediclinic, Massmart. We had some football drama. Shares in Italian soccer giant Juventus had to be suspended as they dropped more than 20% after their team were knocked out of the Champions League last night by Ajax. So sorry for you, Ronaldo. And we saw shares in the Dutch club, on the other hand, celebrating an 8.5% jump. Well, my money's on a Liverpool surge after tonight's return against Porto. I've got Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at F&B Wealth and Investments, and Mike van der Westhuizen, Portfolio Manager at Citadel, with your view from the markets. Evening, guys. Wayne, who's your money on tonight?
Is there anything more important than soccer?
Maybe cars for you.
Yeah, look, I must say I don't follow soccer much. So, let's say Liverpool.
There we go. You can come back next week, Mike. I don't know if you're a big football fan.
Listen, I'm a United supporter. Ooh, so I'm just going to be quiet.
I think you can keep quiet on the first one then. Wayne, I'll let you kick us off. It was one of those funny days on the market. We saw EOH surging 30% before it came down a little bit, and we had a slow grind from red to green. What's your reading of events today, Wayne?
In the slow grind from red to green is probably a little bit with the rand weakening, trading at 13.97. I think that helped the resource shares because they were down quite strongly earlier on today. And it's quite interesting why they were down, is that the Chinese data was so good. The market's now worried that maybe there's no more stimulus to come, and they were counting in a bit of stimulus, so they took a bit of flat. But there's also company-specific issues. BHP gave the production guidance where iron ore was down a little bit, and it was possibly a little bit disappointing to the market. And of course, Kumba came down quite strongly on the back that Vale is going to actually open some of the iron ore mines that have been closed because of the dam disaster, the Slams dam that collapsed again. So the resources down, but the rest of the market up, led by industrials and meds, not space again, and financials did quite well.
And looking at China, its GDP growing 6.4%, industrial output surging, so really good numbers out of China. It is a market itself that has run quite a lot, and as you say, the market probably reading this as good news being a sign of bad news in the form of no more stimulus. One might think that it would be, Mike, to bring you in here, supportive of commodities, though, but there are commodity-specific issues, I think, in that space.
Yeah, I mean, just you talk about the Chinese market going on a bit of a froth this year. Shanghai Composite up over 30% year to date. So yeah, positive numbers, obviously reading well for the globe coming out of China, obviously the big growth engine there. So yes, should be supportive for global growth and for commodities, although commodities have run quite hard, reaching some kind of resistance at these levels. But overall, I think it's a good picture of commodities.
And speaking of commodities, Wayne, we saw an announcement late in the day between Sibanye and AMCU. They finally called it a truce, and this is some 5 months in. AMCU's workers getting an ex gratia payment of 4,000 rand and free transport back to work. Certainly doesn't seem like worth going on strike for 5 months, signing the original deal that was signed with NUM and a few others.
Yeah, look, I mean, sometimes you worry that the people going on strike don't realize what they're losing in comparison to the gains that they get. So yes, I agree with you. But at least it is settled. Look, Sibanye's got other problems in that, the palladium price is going to go down quite a bit, I think, over the next while, and platinum's going to go up, and it doesn't really suit them. But overall, the PGM prices are probably on the downward move, and Sibanye sits with serious debt, and they're trying everything, selling production forward and everything to try doing another rights issue. So, but at least the one problem is out of the way. Just coming back to the first question you asked, EOH, I mean, it's up, as you said, 12%. It was up 50 yesterday, it was up 50. This is obviously as a result of the trading update they got, but even more importantly, there was clearly a short squeeze going on there. You don't see movements like that without someone getting truly squeezed and bleeding there and closing out their short positions.
And that's it as well. You know, having chatted to Stephen Van Coller yesterday, Mike, there is a lot of belief in the turnaround. There's a new management team that he's introduced. He's still going through the legacy issues of the fine-tooth comb, ENS Africa. He's promised to come back at the end of May with the finalisation of those investigations. My concern, though, is, yes, it has a good footprint and established relationships inside both the public and the private sectors. But if you're working with an ICT provider, it isn't that difficult to change ICT providers. And if you look at the troubles that EOH has faced, it's not a Microsoft channel partner anymore as a result of those. It still has significant headwinds. I was, despite the short covering that Wayne mentioned, still surprised that we saw further upside today.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking to some of our equity analysts here, I mean, they literally have thrown the kitchen sink at the issue, trying to turn this business around. I think the magnitude of the write-offs and what they're trying to turn around is probably instilling a bit of confidence. As you say, I mean, I agree with the short covering is probably one of the reasons for the big move. And I don't think there's going to be a lot more upside from that, from especially after today and yesterday. I mean, the stock's up, over 100% over the last week. I think there are still a lot of challenges to come with the business.
Yeah, just looking at the charts on ShareNet here, 153% from its 52-week low of 9 Rand, but it's still 54% down from its 52-week high of around 50. And if we look at its all-time high, close to 170. So still some way to go. It looks like there are a lot of algos trading in this thing. I just got seasick looking at it this morning. And I'd be very hesitant investing any long-term risk capital into this story at this particular stage, at least until we have further information out of that ENS investigation. Wayne, big macro data points out today. We had CPI and retail sales. What really caught your eye with those two numbers?
Well, look, the CPI data, I think it's very much as expected, but it is unfortunately going to go up a little bit over the next 6 months or so, because food inflation has got to come into the system again. And of course, we're working now on the higher oil price against the lower oil price, etc. Unfortunately, I didn't actually see the retail sales numbers. I somehow missed. I don't know what it's like.
1.1% year on year. So slightly better than the market was looking for, yeah.
Yeah. Because when you look at the retail data, I mean, Massmart also came up with their trading update. Now, they did say base effects and Easter and one day of Easter. Yes, I mean, it gets so confusing sometimes where Easter falls. But it was still nevertheless looked like a good trading update. So certainly they seem to be doing a bit better. And so maybe the consumer's not in as bad a condition as what everyone makes it out to be.
Mike, it does seem that way from the retail numbers. And Massmart came out with its trading update, which was slightly better than expected and up over 6% on the day as well. Do you think we've been overestimating just how hamstrung consumers are by their personal balance sheets, and perhaps they're starting to become a little bit more confident? And it's certainly not pressure on whether or not consumers can spend because of their debt levels, but rather whether or not they want to spend because of confidence levels.
I mean, yeah, it's quite a balanced picture in terms of, I mean, that retail sales number, if you look on a 3 month sort of average, is still quite weak. I mean, consumer is somewhat supported by, you know, this benign inflation outlook. I mean, monetary policy is still quite accommodative. We've seen decent credit uptake. But I mean, on the other side, sentiment's still quite depressed in the consumer sector. And then we mentioned the higher fuel prices. So there's a fine balance that we're seeing. And I think that, you know, maybe after the election, when we get some more clarity on policy going forward, maybe we might see an increase in sentiment from the consumer. And I think sentiment goes a long way in driving the consumer behavior.
And sentiment likely to be further dampened, though, by fuel price rises. If you look at the Central Energy Fund, that's guiding towards another chunky increase for the fuel price in May, currently around at 50-odd cents if you look at the under-recovery there. So it would be nice if we could see the oil price come back down from above 70, where it's been rather stubbornly pitched for the last couple of weeks. Wayne, I want to turn now to Mediclinic and that trading update. It didn't seem to be all that great. Certainly not a trading update that was unexpected by the market, but another one that stood out on the day, up over 6%.
Yeah, look, I mean, the market, the trading update was not good, but it was as the market was expecting. Now, quite often, companies that have had a torrid time, quite often when they come up with a trading update, even though it's bad, it might even, in fact, be worse than the market's expecting and it's been slaughtered. So here we have an exact opposite, where they came up with a trading update that was poor, but it was virtually spot on to what the market was expecting, so the market rewarded Mediclinic for that. But I mean, Mediclinic's had a tough time, so the environment they're operating in, I mean, South Africa didn't look too bad. Hirslander in Switzerland, you know, big margin squeeze there, tough environment, and it's all legislative. I mean, it's all legislative. There's big structural changes from inpatient to outpatient and day clinics, from staying overnight in hospital. But of course, the biggest single thing in Switzerland there is they're regulating how much you can charge. So this from an all-time high, I mean, admittedly, I never quite understood why it spiked so much after it converted in 2016. I mean, the share price spiked virtually 100%. But if you measure it from the all-time high, that was about 210 Rand, is down at 60 odd Rand now. And that's come back a long, long way. And, you know, maybe it's looking reasonably priced at sort of the early teens PE ratio, but the whole structural position that the medical industry finds itself in, I'm worried longer term. I think there's going to be more and more regulatory interference.
And we see it in the US as well. The US healthcare stocks have been slammed, United Health and Medicare for All, Bernie Sanders. How is it going to be paid for? And what happens after you wipe out the insurance industry? I think globally, we've gone a little bit mad, effectively nationalizing healthcare without thinking about the long-term impacts and ramifications. So I share your sentiments on that one, Wayne. I just need to correct myself. It was up 5.5%. It came down marginally late in the day, but still not a bad move by Mediclinic. That was Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at F&B Wealth and Investments, and Mike van der Westhuizen, Portfolio Manager at Citadel, with your view from the market. Let's find out what's happening out on the roads with Pussy Letso.